Welcome to the Superhero of Love podcast. I am Bridget Fonger, and I wrote a book called Superhero of Love, Heal Your Broken Heart and Then Go Save the World. My book is all about helping people love and be loved more than ever. I believe we all have a superhero of love inside of us. Yes, even you, superhero. And in this podcast, I talk to people who are all about helping us all tap into that superhero. May this episode make a difference for your heart. Let's get this party started. Welcome, superhero. We are here today with Jerry Scherr, who is my friend, my heart friend. She is a giant heart in the world. She is a major superhero of love who happens to also be an Emmy Award-winning director for a movie, a short movie called Step Up that you'll hear about, and also an incredible movie that could potentially be affecting most of our lives that'll be coming out soon, called Quiet Explosions. So it's a really important interview for everybody to hear. I'm so glad you're hearing it. I'm glad you're here. Thanks for coming, superhero. Here we go. Yay, I'm so excited that we're here in your home, your beautiful home. I am super excited to talk to you today because you're doing an incredible thing for the world. You're bringing a new movie out into the world that is going to affect so many people's lives and, in fact, is already helping some people that I know. So I'm so excited about that, that I actually know someone that this movie is already helping is very moving. So your new movie, Quiet Explosions, Healing the Brain, I want you to tell me first how this even came to you, because I love how this project came to you, because you and I share a passion for not only synchronicities, but the father of all synchronicities. We have this shared love for James Redfield, whose book affected both of our lives. So tell us about the magical synchronicity that brought you to Quiet Explosions.
Thank you, Bridget. Thank you for having me on this show. It was pretty preposterous when I got an email from a girl that I babysat for when I was 16 years old in Fall River, Massachusetts, where I grew up. And she said, I am working on a book. I'm in the publishing house now, and I'm up in Maine, and this book is pretty amazing. It's like the best book ever. It's about a Green Beret with traumatic brain injury and how he's healed through a doctor in Encino, California. And I think you should make the movie about it, because she said, I've watched your career over like the last many years, and I know you make documentaries, and I know you've won Emmys, and I think you should make the movie of this. So can I call you? And then one thing led to another. She called and we got together and I said, well, it sounds good, but I need to see the galleys, because everyone calls me and tells me they have the best story, the best book, the best idea, but not always is that the case. So she sent the galleys before the book came out and I read it. And I was extremely taken with Andrew Marr, the Green Beret, but I was also excited that this doctor, a neuroendocrinologist, Mark Gordon, is in my backyard in Encino, right near me. And I thought, this is amazing. This just sort of fell in my lap. So I told her she could have Andrew call me, and we talked. He was in Texas at the time, and he wanted to come out and see me, and we were going to schedule it. But I was leaving in 2 weeks for a big, big job in Australia and New Zealand, so he said, I'm coming next week. And he came. We went down into our screening room, and we watched a few of my shows, past shows of Live Life, and he said, you have the rights to the book, Jerry. So I said, Andrew, this is great, but I'll only do it under one condition. It'll be a third military, a third athletes, and a third civilians, because I knew that traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress really affected 80 million people in the world.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that, because we have a mutual friend, a civilian, who is possibly starting work with him. And that's what this movie is going to do. It's like it's going to be this endless synchronicity of somebody seeing it and telling somebody about it. And thank you for that amazing work. Actually, tell us a little bit also. Tell us the title of Andrew Marr's book first.
The book is Tales from the Blast Factory, and it was written by Adam Marr and Andrew Marr, brothers. Adam was an Apache pilot. Actually, the mom and dad had four boys, all in the military, all in the Army. And they, you know, they talk about it in the movie that she was just afraid, you know, for their lives. Sure. And, you know, Andrew was in Afghanistan, and you know, the other Marine who's in the movie was in Iraq, and then Kevin, who's in the movie, was in Afghanistan. So they were all in very dangerous situations. You know, Green Berets, let's face it, they do the work, you know, the hardest jobs, and they're sent in when nobody else can fix it. So the blast trauma that they hear and have in their brain is horrific and causes all these problems besides what they witness, you know. I mean, it's just horrifying.
Yeah. So tell us about what the Dr. Gordon does that is so breathtakingly new and different.
Well, because he's a neuroendocrinologist and not necessarily a neurologist or a neuroscientist, he figured out that in the base of the brain, there's a pituitary gland, and every time these guys got knocked around, and it happens in sports all the time too, the pituitary gland stops making the necessary hormones that are important for you to function properly. And you have over 18 hormones in your brain, certain amounts of them, many of them, like cortisol and testosterone and pregnenolone. And he figures out through a very intensive blood work study, and only one lab in the country does it in Jupiter, Florida, and they can figure out what's missing in the brain, which hormones are not there anymore, or what degree is not there. And they can replenish those hormones in a very specific kind of way, you know, 20 milligrams of this or 100 milligrams of this, morning, night, and so on. And these people are then getting better, and they have a new life.
One of the things that affects people with TBI is depression. So tell us about how, because I actually, I was so moved even just by your trailer about the, and what we've talked about one-on-one about this, about how it's affecting people with depression, because there's a lot of suicides after TBIs, right?
So, well, it's so prevalent. I mean, depression, anxiety, 20 military guys, veterans kill themselves every day. The suicide rate is horrific. And hopefully that's going to change through this film. But depression, anxiety, alcoholism, severe, you know, schizophrenia, just, you know, lack of sleep, zombieism, you name it. It's the gamut. It runs the gamut. And what happens is they feel badly because they can't function anymore. They can't even remember their name sometimes because a lot of the cognition that used to be in their brain is gone. One guy, I mean, he couldn't remember his kids' names. So that makes you depressed, you know, when you realize that you've lost your faculty, so to speak, and you're brain damaged or you have impairment, that can really put you under. Right. And then you want to sleep all day or, you know, be up all night or drink, you know, 10 bottles. And then you can't talk to your family. So they kind of go in a closet, close the door, and they hibernate.
Right. That's how many families are going to be affected by this movie. It's so great. So, and it also makes me think, I mean, I think that everybody that's listening is going to think, oh my gosh, could I be missing one of these hormones? Because we don't even know. So we don't know if an injury that we've had during our lives is actually a traumatic brain injury sometimes. And also, you were talking about how emotional trauma can affect the brain just like a TBI. So tell us about that.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, many people have fallen off a bicycle and hit their head or been in a little car accident over the years that you kind of forget that something happened to you. We have a gymnast, you know, in the film who constantly falls and hits her head. We have a surfer. I mean, he's had thousands of concussions. Yeah. There are so many people that are affected. And emotionally, there's a big thing with, like, in the military, you know, women and men are raped. And they have emotional scars. And then grief is another big problem with an emotional scar, with losing your partner or your buddy and then having him die in your arms. So this all causes inflammation in the brain. And that's what happens with the symptoms from the inflammation. Okay. And that's why a lot of people with emotional trauma have the same symptoms exactly as the people who are in the football field and get their head smashed.
That is amazing. I remember you were saying that when somebody at Disney saw the movie. Tell us about that story.
Yeah. So David Kornblum, who is the senior vice president of Walt Disney World, came to our distributor screening, And we were just very excited and taken that he came. And he called me, he loved the film, and he called me the next morning, which was really nice. Everybody says to me, it's great that he even took the time to call you. And he said, you know, if you're over 40, every person who has a brain has to see this movie.
That's because what I'm thinking too.
You know, Alzheimer's and dementia comes in and all these things you worry about. He said, I want to go right now after seeing your movie and get my brain scanned. Yeah. So I thought, wow. But of course, Disney wants, you know, children's fare, so they're not going to be the one to take this to the world. But he was very taken. And I said to myself, wow, every person who has a brain needs to see Quiet Explosions.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too. I'm sure that everybody's thinking the same thing. And emotional traumas. We've all had emotional traumas, and we've all fallen. I just fell out of my tree last year. I mean, you know, like, but, you know, I really do feel like we should all go and check this out. This is amazing. And hopefully it'll become something that is more widespread, that more doctors are. Is he teaching other doctors to do it?
Yes, for sure. So Dr. Gordon has been training in different seminars, people all over the country, how to do these protocols and his methods. He's also in conjunction working with Dr. Amen, because Dr. Daniel Amen, who has the Amen clinics around the country, and he's in our movie, and he's the person who started the SPECT scan to look at the blood flow in the brain, not just an MRI or a CT scan. And this is critical because you can actually see what's happening in the brain through the blood flow. So a lot of the people in our movie have been treated by Dr. Gordon and by Dr. Amen, mm-hmm. and also by Dr. Cher, who does hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which is another method that is being used to help the brain.
Okay, yeah, tell us about that, because I know that you're excited about the hyperbaric chamber thing.
Well, HBOT is a relatively newish thing. I mean, it's been around a while, but now people are starting to talk about it. And it's actually very prevalent in Israel. They can put 200 people in a chamber in one day together, a big, huge...
What?
Yes, it's huge.
I've been in one, but it was a single person. Right. Are they usually a single person?
Yeah, they are. But in Israel, they're the state, the country that is ahead of anyone else in the world.
Is it because of the military? Or
no,
is it...
I think they're very cutting edge about medicine, and they're very dynamic, and they actually have 20,000 people on the waiting list to get in there.
Wow.
Yeah, so HBOT is working on
which
many
for
levels.
Hyperbaric oxygen therapy,
which is working on many levels for different types of things. I mean, they're using it for, you know, all kinds of situations. But in a lot of cases, it's covered by insurance. A lot of cases, maybe not, but it will be someday soon. Because what happened, you know, 20 years ago, MRI and CT scan, and it was just getting in. Now, people are starting to talk about HBOT, and between 7 and 10 years, it will be common, very common.
Right, like people will have them in their houses. A friend of mine has one in her house.
Right.
All right.
It's oxygen.
Yeah.
Massive doses of oxygen, which heal the brain.
Yeah. Okay, so can you tell us, I would love for you to share just one of the stories, because the reason I wanted to have you on this podcast is that you are somebody who, in my opinion, every single time I've seen you and all the stories I've heard about you, you lead with your heart. You are a superhero of love. And I would love to hear one of the stories in the movie that moved you the most. I know that I'm sure they're all like your little babies, but tell us, because I know that that's what hooked you with the book. So tell us a little bit about how your heart was moved.
Well, my heart was moved by all of the characters in many ways. I think because of my insides and my superhero of love, the fact that I have, you know, the empathy for these people, I would say that one of my particular characters, Annie, who was in the Navy, Naval Academy, as a midshipman, when I met Annie and Dr. Gordon told me he was treating her, she told me, you know, I've been through the gamut. I've been on CNBC and I've been, you know, in all the magazines and I've gone to Congress and I've spoken here and there and everywhere. But I will tell you something, Jerry, when you come to Texas, my mother has never, ever, and will not talk to anyone. There's no press. She doesn't give any interviews. You can talk to my dad, but you won't be able to talk. My mom won't do it. So I'm thinking to myself, I am going to talk to her mother and she is going to be in the movie. So, that was what I had to do. And I was telling Casey, you know, I was a cinematographer, listen, we're going to have a two-shot with the mother and the father. But this was my challenge. But it's because of who I am and what I have in my heart that the way I spoke to the mom, Lisa, before we brought the cameras in or anything, and the way I got to know her and the way I talked to her, she gave me such an incredible interview. It wasn't even a question that she wasn't going to be in the movie, but I'm telling you, she's so amazing in the movie. And to me, that was like just the frosting on the cake, like, because I knew she had never, ever opened up to anyone else before.
That's so beautiful. That's so moving. Yes, that's how you walk out into life. Speaking of life, let's give a little, because I just want to say why I know you is from your documentary, Live Life, which will also be out in the future. Live Life, which is a 12-part series on healing. And four of the parts mention my teacher, Master John Douglas. And I saw, I think I saw all four of those parts and I was blown away. And it's just so uplifting. So tell us a little bit about that, because that also was a major heart project for you, is a heart project.
It really is. When I was up at Esalen many, many years ago, I met Dr. Emmett Miller. He was giving a seminar, and it was on guided imagery and healing. And I didn't know what guided imagery was. I had never really heard about it. But the more I learned from him, I thought, this is amazing. So I gave him my card. I said, hey, if you're ever interested in a documentary, call me. And he did. He followed right up. So one thing led to another, and we started this journey. He told me about some of his patients, and particularly a little boy who was 9 with a brain tumor. And the dad was a cardiologist, and the mom and dad were told he'll be dead in a year. So I followed up with Will, and that's how I started the project. And we thought it was going to be a documentary film, but it got so involved and it became so much bigger that it ended up being a 12-part series on healing through alternative medicine. So, you know, this boy, I followed for 10 years.
Wow.
And now he just graduated college. So he healed basically through going to John of God in Brazil and nutrition and acupuncture and guided imagery. Then I had the fortunate experience of meeting Master John Douglas. So when I met John, and, you know, he never really gave anyone else an interview on camera, I said to myself, I am the one he's going to do this for, because I have no agenda. I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to be truthful and sincere and legitimate and let the story unravel. And that's what happened. So we have 4 of the 12 stories work around his healing, which is completely way out there. I mean, people would not, you know, think it's nothing to do with Western medicine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of our characters in that story had the same type of cancer as Farrah Fawcett, and she should have been dead, and she's been alive and well. And, you know, she was with John Douglas, and then she went back to the Mayo Clinic to show them her results, and they said, well, this is impossible. How did this happen? So something short of a miracle.
So let's go back to what we mentioned earlier. I want to talk about synchronicities and how you've lived your life, because this feels like this is just a natural way that you live your life. You don't, you know, it's very, I consider, tell me if this is true, that your life is very smooth and it just kind of rolls along, because it feels like you're so in touch with the divine and with your heart, and you're just following your instincts. Have you always been aware of synchronicities, or did James Redfield's book awaken that in you?
I wasn't always aware. It was James Redfield's book, The Celestine Prophecy, that enlightened me about being aware of who's with me or who comes into my life and why. But it was also my training with Tony Robbins. I actually had the fortunate experience in my second career to be trained by Tony, and I really believe that's how I'm able to move mountains and solve miraculous problems and become a filmmaker without having gone to film school. But, you know, not everything is smooth all the time. I'll tell you the truth. I mean, I make sure that they say, you know, make lemonade out of lemons. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have to do that. That's my job. So if Casey and I are traveling and we have, a situation in Nashville or in Atlanta or, Boise, and it's horrific, I always figure out a way to solve it. You know, I have to think outside the box, and that's what I'm good at. So I'm a problem solver, and I think outside the box. But also, the way I'm able to do that is I never surround myself with anything negative. So in my whole life, I never watch news. I never read a newspaper. I do not want any negativity coming into my brain or coming into my body or my soul or my spirit. Mm-hmm. I have to keep very positive. The only way that people will be uplifted by me is if I'm positive to them. Mm-hmm. So I find that if I have a situation that's not positive, it's just me and myself that discuss it in my own brain. I'm not a complainer ever. It's funny, Dr. Gordon and I were talking about this yesterday. We were together, and he was saying to me, you know, he's not a complainer, and there are some people in the world that I'm not either, because you have to be positive. You know, people don't want to be with you if you're not really giving out good vibrations. And the other thing I do is I only surround myself with people like me or better. Mm. And that's another thing I learned, you know, from life.
Were you like that as a child, though? I just imagine you as even as a child.
I think
like
so.
Flitting around with positivity.
Yes, I think so. And I'm the oldest of four children. I was always, you know, a high achiever. At 8 years old, 12 years old, I won every contest. I had my artwork was in the museums in Washington, D.C. It was picked from one in the country. So, you know, I've had things happen to me that are unusual, I would say. But it's just because I had good ethics. I had a great upbringing. My parents were always, you know, I had good philosophy. I came from great values. You know, we weren't rich, but we had anything we needed, basically, kind of. And I also graduated college in 3.5 years, magna cum laude, because I had to get to Germany to be with my husband because he was drafted in the Vietnam War and we had been married and I couldn't mess around. It's like I needed straight A's and 7 courses the last semester to graduate early.
Oh,
and
God.
I did it.
Oh my God. That's a perfect segue into what I want to talk about next, which is your marriage, which is now a how many year marriage?
August is 50 years.
Woohoo! So tell us your secrets to this long and unbelievably happy marriage. Like, you guys are so, it looks like this is like a second or third marriage for you guys, the way that you act around each other. Like, you're so magically in love. But literally, I didn't think it was a first marriage for you. Can I just tell you that the first time I saw you guys together, I didn't think it was your first marriage. It's unbelievable, the zestiness and spark that you still have. So tell us some secrets.
Well, I would say the reason I think it happened this way is that when we first got married and we lived in Germany for a year, it was, you know, time 1970, there were no telephones and there was no communication with family or anyone. So basically the two of us are living in Dossenheim, Germany, and it's just the two of us. So we basically became best friends in a country that we didn't know the language, in a military which we weren't familiar with, and besides being, you know, husband and wife, lovers, this and that, we had to be best friends first because our nights were playing Parcheesi with a bottle of wine, you know, up in a third floor walk up in Frau Riedling's house, you know. So and we had no money because Alan's salary was $85 a month. And I had to stuff shelves at the PX to make us some extra $50 a week. And it was killing me because here I had a Bachelor of Fine Arts, magna cum laude, and I'm a teacher, and here I am stuffing shelves. But every now and then they would call me from the American school on base, and they needed a substitute teacher, and I would call in sick at the PX so I could teach because I got like $50 a day.
Oh, my God, that's great.
But I think that solid foundation of not having any interference with family or people made us so solid. Mm. That's all I can think.
That's
and then
really
the
cool.
other thing was that
I love, I want to stop on that point of the non-interference by family. That's so cool. It would be a really cool thing if you could cocoon your marriage for the first couple of years of every marriage and go cocoon it. That's like you had the honor of being able to do that. That's great.
I think that's what did it.
That's
and
cool.
And then we also have tremendous respect for one another where we have completely different lives and our careers are completely different. So We let each other. He always let me work full time, even though I was raising my family, and you know, let me. But in those days, you know, women weren't working when I was in my first and second career. So I think we made sure to give each other space, mm-hmm. and he was always proud of me. He is proud of me now, but you know, I never take anything for granted. So after Alan got sick and had his heart attack when he was 50, and that was in 1997, 22 years ago. I just wanted to get him to the next birthday, to the next anniversary, to the next holiday, to see our children. And that was my main focus, like keep him alive. And that's what I focused on. And my job is to make him happy and to make it sparkful and exciting and do special things. If I know, you know, he wants to go see Miss Saigon, I get tickets for Miss Saigon, whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think because we are so good to one another, it made it work for both of us together.
It sounds like what you're also doing when you're doing that by catering to his whims and his loves is you're giving him a future to live into, too. Like, you have Miss Saigon that's happening. You have this trip, this vacation, because I know you guys, oh my God, following you guys on Instagram and Facebook is so fun because seeing your vacations is so hilarious and wonderful. But creating a future together. Like, I think that's one thing that sometimes marriages that kind of become a little bit stale, they don't create futures together, like something that they're both looking forward to as a unit, which is something that you guys are professionals.
We try, and I think the other thing is that Alan is very family-oriented, and we have two amazing daughters, and we're very close to our children, very close. We always have been. We talk to them every day. They care about what we're doing, and now we have been blessed by having five grandchildren, and Alan became, like, alive again with the grandchildren. He absolutely is so keyed into each child. You know, he wants to know what they're doing, and he goes to the ball games with them, and he watches them play soccer, and, you know, watches them swim, he takes them to the movies, we both do. But I think that this has been a huge boost for him because he's always loved children, and in the movie you'll see he was a professional cuddler, which means he rocked babies in the hospital, in the neonatal ward.
Oh my God.
When he got sick, he needed to volunteer.
Oh my God, a professional cuddler. I'm sorry, but that is so who he comes into the world as. I mean, like, that's who you're like... That is not a surprise. Okay, continue. I'm sorry. I was so shocked by that, and that's so adorable.
Well, it was pretty amazing. When he went to the hospital to volunteer after he couldn't work anymore, they said, you know, he said, I want to work with children, and they said, we have a cuddling program, but we don't have any males. It has to be a female. And he said, well, I want to apply for that job. So he is the first male cuddler in the Northeast, and he changed the laws, rules, whatever, that now they have male cuddlers. And the doctors became very friendly with Alan and said, you know what, Alan, it's really amazing that these babies that you get to sleep and you rock are so happy to hear your male voice because we're doctors and we're poking them and prodding them and they only have bad from the male voice.
Oh my God, that's such a beautiful distinction.
Yeah. So it's pretty exciting and pretty amazing that he did that. And he talks about it in the film because he's one of the characters who's been healing through Dr. Gwynne's protocols. And we're very grateful that he's getting better.
Did he have a TBI?
He was in surgery for about 10 hours during his open heart surgery and lost his short-term memory completely.
Okay.
And went through all of the same exact symptoms as Andrew Marr. And Ben and everyone with the depression and suicidal ideation. And I mean, he really was down and out because he couldn't remember anything.
Oh my God. Wow. And is it working? How's it going?
Well, he's getting a lot better. He's improving tremendously.
Wow.
So it's pretty miraculous. And it's funny because I wasn't making the movie because of him. It had nothing to do with him. I was in the movie and I was with Dr. Gordon and Andrew for 3 or 4 days in San Diego on a conference. And you know, you get talking at night, you're sitting around a campfire or whatever, and fireplace, and I'm telling them about my husband and my life and what happened to Alan and why he doesn't work. And Dr. Gordon said, I think I can help him. And I'm like, oh, no, you can't. It's been 22 years. He said, honestly, Jerry, I think I can help him.
Wow.
So we started going to him, and I said to Casey, let's just start filming it. We don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
So that was the only story we were actually filming as it was happening and unraveling. We didn't know what the outcome would be. Everybody else was a backstory. And sure enough, we've seen some miraculous improvements.
Whoa. Oh my God, that's so exciting. Oh my God. And that's going to continue to happen as soon as the movie comes out. I'm so excited. Okay, now let's talk about your daughter. So mothering, being a mother while you're also pursuing your... You had three different careers, right? So as a mother, did you go through... This is your third career filmmaking, right?
Yes.
So tell us how you navigated that and staying close to both of your daughters, right? I just... It's kind of unusual. I have a few friends that all the siblings are close to their parents, but I have to say it's unusual out there in the world. So tell us what you think your secret is there.
Well, I have to say that, you know, we always had helpers, daycare and nannies and people, because I worked full time. You know, my first career, I was an art professor, and I used to drop them off at the daycare at the college when I was working there. And then later on, when I was in the trucking industry, which is kind of how I learned how to be a producer, you know...
I'm sorry, the juxtaposition between art professor and trucking industry is so hilarious. I just love that you have those two sides of you. Anyway, continue. You learned there to be a producer.
Well, I was the chief negotiator for Fortune 500 companies on their freight budgets, and that's how I learned money and finance and producerial skills and working with the Teamsters. And I wrote a story about a script about a woman in the trucking business, and that's how I got in the movie business.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how it all happened. But when I had these children, and, you know, it was because Alan was Mr. Mom. His office was in the house, and he was a tax accountant, and he did everything for them. He drove them. He did dancing lessons with them. He went to their games because I was traveling. You know, I was in Maryland or Pennsylvania or whatever, giving, you know, freight, working on these companies. So I was able to do it because of the fact that Alan was Mr. Mom. And I think that's why they're so close to Alan as well. But, you know, we've always been close. And anything that I experienced that was good for me, I shared with them. So when I did the Tony Robbins thing and it was so empowering, I made sure that my girls did it. So my children were like 9, 7, and 9. They were the youngest children to ever walk on the hot coals with Anthony Robbins.
Whoa.
Yeah, and they broke wood with their bare hands. And so I think I empowered them just the way I was being empowered. Mm-hmm. And they always saw, like, I was their role model, I think, that you can do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've proven that to all of us, which is why I also wanted to have you on here, that you can lead with your heart and be wildly successful. Because sometimes people think that you have to err on the side of one or the other, right? Choosing success and pushing your heart and the love out of your life. So it's a great... I'm so happy to have you on here.
Well, some people think you have to sacrifice family for your career.
That's true.
That is not the case. And I would tell every woman out there, you can have it all. You can have a loving family and be a loving parent and have a career. It's just a matter of balancing. And what I always say is I compartmentalize. So it's funny, it's about the brain. But if I'm reading a story to my grandchild, I'm 150% in that story. And I'm never thinking of anything else. Same thing if I'm working. If I'm working, I'm doing that. So I make sure that I divide what I'm doing and just give it 100%. I try to be in the moment. I try to never think about the past and never worry about the future.
That's great. Okay, where's your heart taking you next? Because you're now, this movie shall soon be out. Distributors are struggling to grab it, and which is a good place to be. So tell us, where's your heart being drawn to next?
Well, I want to be there for the opening of the film and doing press and going, you know, to screenings and Q&As. But also, I've been contacted by a few people, people who either have a book out, people who are also in the medical field who want me to work on their story. So I have a lot of good options, but I'm not rushing into anything mm-hmm. because I want to see this thing through and I want to make sure that it has its journey properly.
Yeah.
And, I never really worry about what the next thing is going to be because it always finds me. Like, all these great projects find me.
That synchronicity thing. Yeah. The babysitter thing when you were 16 years old blows me away. Mm. That is so beautiful. That's also a testament to your heart, maintaining those relationships and, like, people want to reach out to you after years and... That's a beautiful thing too. Like, I haven't heard from a lot of people since my book came out from my childhood or anything. Like, and I was thinking that the other day. It's like, well, now my name is more out there. It's interesting that I haven't heard from anybody. So I should be a little bit more Jerry Sure about my life, I think.
Well, it's funny you say that because, Bridget, this is pretty amazing what just happened. But in May, well, it happened in January, they called me from my high school and they said, you've been awarded the Alumni Awards, Achievement Award, whatever. It was some big thing, but it's a very prestigious thing. I mean, they picked me out of, I don't know, 40,000 people.
Oh, my God.
Just a big thing. So
congratulations.
Thank you. So they said, you know, you need to come, and you're going to speak to the whole high school, and it's a big ceremony. So the publicity went out, and it went to, you know, every single graduate from BMC Durfee High School. And I got emails from people, like you said, from my high school, that I couldn't believe. This one kid, this guy, he said, I sat behind you in Spanish, and you probably don't remember me, I'm so-and-so. And he said, you changed my life, because you said to me, Johnny, did you do your college essays? Have you worked on your applications? And I said, no. And I said, you need to get right on that. He said, you inspired me then. And I still remember that. And I thought, oh, my God.
See, you've been that spark since you were a little girl. I told you. I knew it. It's not a recent development. It's not just Tony Robbins. It's not just anything. It's the way that you live your life. So thank you for sharing your heart with us today. And tell everybody where they can find you and everything that you want them to do. Give us some directions with your wild heart, please.
Well, I would say go to quietexplosions.com, which is the main website. You can see the trailer there. You could go to jerryscher.com, which is the JERRISHER.com. That also has the trailer. It has all my other work and different movies. You can see the piece that I did when I won the Emmy, a step-up movie. You know, just follow us on Facebook. There's a Quiet Explosions page. Know that your relationships with your family, your siblings, which I'm so close to my three other siblings, and your parents and your children is very important in your life. It can only make your life richer and better, and that's how I live my life.
Oh, so beautiful. Thank you so much, Jerry, for hosting me in your home and being on the Superhero of Love podcast. I know this is going to be a gift to many superheroes of love that hear this today. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Bridget, it's been my honor to be with you today, and thank you so much for telling everyone in the world about Quiet Explosions.
Superhero, thanks for coming. If you like this podcast, please go rate, review, and tell your friends about it. Thanks for coming. Have a great day.